Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_VBall. Today's podcast is brought to you by Basketball Monster and by Hardwood Paroxysm. So make sure you're going and checking out both those websites. Go across and check out the new Pod Center on Hardwood Paroxysm and of course everything that's happening across at Basketball Monster. Today we're doing another in the season preview series of podcasts, and today we're going to be tackling the Oklahoma City Thunder, a team with quite a few questions that are abound with lots of different situations. In order to talk Oklahoma City Thunder, I am joined by David Ramil, the editor at Thunderous Intentions, writer for Hardwood Paroxysm and on SB Nation as well. David, how are you going?
I'm doing very well, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm very good. It's good to have you on. It's good to talk some Thunder because there is a lot to talk about with this team. There are a lot of questions for a team who could easily be considered the best in the NBA, but there's a lot that we don't know about this team. But before we get into talking about what we need to know about the Thunder, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
Well, DRamil13 is my Twitter handle, so that's the best place to find me.
Cool. Everybody go ahead and follow David there on Twitter, and obviously there'll be links to him throughout on my Twitter feed and in the post for the show and all that sort of stuff, so you can go across and hit him up there to talk all things Thunder. Now, David, as a Thunder guy, as a writer for the Thunder, last season had to be extremely frustrating with KD. Let's get straight into talking about KD's now and his foot. He came back probably early, re-aggravated it. How worried are you on a scale of 1 to 10 of him not being the same or him re-injuring that foot this season? Are you cautiously optimistic? Are you cautious? Are you pessimistic? How do you see it?
I am optimistic. I'm not anywhere near cautious. Maybe I represent the minority of Thunder fans, but I think that what we've seen over the summer and the way his injury was handled by the team and his personal doctors, I think that he's near full strength, if not at full strength already. He had an impressive showing with the USA men's basketball team. It was just a minor practice, and not necessarily anything intensive, but he still showed that he's ready to go. There were some, workouts that he had with some other members of the Thunder team in Los Angeles prior to joining USA men's basketball, and it looks like he's ready to go. So
David has dropped out just as we were talking to, but he'll be back in a second. Get him back with his connection. But in terms of the situation with KD, it is obviously something that's a little bit it's concerning to me in terms of just it's a foot injury, and where you're going to have to pick KD is going to have to be at the top of a draft. And we don't know. That's the thing. And the risk could pay off. It could turn into a pretty big reward. It might also not pay off. It might end up blowing up in your face. And that's where I'm a little bit hesitant with KD. He could go from, you could pick him at pick four and he could become the top player. And that's great to me. And all of the other guys in the top three, they all might get injured as well. We never know about that sort of stuff. But to me, if I'm picking in that top of the draft, I mentioned it the other day on a show, that it's very hard to win your draft from the first round, but it's a lot easier to lose it. And for me, KD is just, he's risky. If I'm picking in the top three, I'm not going near him. After that, it becomes a little bit different. And David, I think you're back.
I don't know what happened there.
No,
sorry about that.
You just completely froze, but that's good. I'll let you continue talking about KD, then I'll continue my thoughts as well. So keep going with KD.
I don't know where the feed left off there.
You were talking about USA basketball.
Yeah. It looks like he's at full strength. So I think as far as his overall health is concerned, I think he looks ready to roll. He's talked very optimistically about being able to return to the team, and I have no reason to doubt him at this point. I know foot injuries can be somewhat tricky, historically, such as, the Walton have had problems with foot injuries, Greg Oden even more recently. So you look at players like that, and obviously they're going to struggle with their feet. But I think he's back to full strength, so I think he's going to be ready to roll, and I don't see a problem for this season.
Okay, so you think that he's going to be playing the majority of the games this year? He's not going to be on any sort of minutes restriction or anything like that? Or do you think that they might ease him back in? Or do you think that's just full steam ahead?
I think there'll be minutes restriction as far as per game basis. I don't think he's going to be playing close to the averages that he has in the past. But that's not to say that he won't be available for, you know, most of the games this season. That's my thought on the process. I think, you know, with a new coaching staff in place, they're going to be gauging exactly how effective he'll be. But I think this team needs him on the floor, and they'll put him out there as often as possible. But I don't think that he'll be on there as frequently as he was in seasons past. I mean, he was one of the players that logged the most minutes per season over the last 5 years or so. So I think that's something that they definitely want to watch out.
Yeah, it's you're probably not going to see him up at 37 minutes or something like that. I think 35 is probably the right spot at this point. But as I was saying when you dropped out, David, I was talking about KD, and there's still somewhat of a risk associated with him, in my opinion. Like, everything we've seen has been great. There's been no real cause for concern, but I'm still slightly optimistic, especially if I'm spending a top five pick on a guy. I said I wouldn't be taking him in a fantasy league ahead of Steph Curry or James Harden or Anthony Davis. And then it gets a little bit tricky whether you are ready to take that risk. Look, nothing could happen to him. There's a massive chance that he goes through completely unscathed, but there's still that slight chance that the foot is marginally weakened and he gets some soreness and it causes him to miss more games than he may have. The risk of a re-break is always high. We've seen it in guys now, albeit a different injury. Joel Embiid, Brook Lopez are two names of guys currently in the NBA who have had that injury multiple times. Now, he had it multiple issues with it last season. Does that carry over? He's had a lot of time to rest it, but there's still a little bit of a risk there. And it makes it hard for me to invest a huge amount in Durant in terms of fantasy stock, because look, someone will want to grab him. And if he starts sliding, if he's at pick six or pick seven, then absolutely, I'm happy with it at that point. But it's just that I don't want to deal with him in the top three picks. And even probably the top four, I would rather take a guy like a Chris Paul, DeMarcus Cousins I've taken in a draft ahead of him at that point as well. It really depends on how your personal makeup is and how sort of solid you want to get with players. And as I said, anybody can get injured. We don't know. Can't predict the future. Touching as much wood as I can. You know, Anthony Davis could go down and break his leg, and Steph Curry could tear his ACL, and all this could happen. And it's completely up in the air. But when you've already got a built-in risk, that to me is where I'm just a little bit cautious with him now. The thing is, if I'm drafting in a roto league versus a head-to-head league, I'm probably more willing to go in on KD, because you do have that ability to stash on the bench, use someone else in his place, and his game is fantastic. It's fantastic for head-to-head, and it's fantastic for roto as well. But in roto, the way he projects out, he comes out a lot higher. He comes out projected in the top three in terms of ranking. So I'd be much happier at four in a roto league. I'd be smashing Durant. I could stash him on the bench. And you don't lose as much as in a head-to-head league. I know that in a head-to-head league, you can stash on the bench or in IR and all that sort of stuff and have them back for the playoffs. But you also don't know when injuries are going to occur. Whereas in a roto league, he could play the first 3 months of the season and then get injured and miss a month. And then you could move him onto the bench in that situation and put someone else in. And you got that 82 game cap. But in a head-to-head league, it's a little bit different in terms of you have to have them healthy at the right time. You have to make sure you're winning enough games to get yourself into the playoffs and all that sort of stuff. So that's a slight difference I see between head-to-head and roto, especially in those roto leagues, which pretty much all of them are, where they have the games played cap, where you can be a little bit more adventurous with injury risk players, because you do have that ability to move them into a bench which isn't used. We're in a head-to-head league, your bench is always used. You're rotating guys through all the time. Like, if you've got 13 guys, 10 starters, and 3 bench guys, you're going to be using those 3 bench guys. You have to be using them every week, you know, to maximize their games. In a roto league, they'll just sit on the bench and not do anything. Now, if you're in a league with weekly lineup changes, that's a different situation again. So in a head-to-head league and a weekly lineup, it basically gives you 3 injured reserve slots. If you are in a weekly lineup league, I don't like weekly lineup leagues. I understand why some people do them, but that's a complete different situation, or a completely different mindset in terms of drafting, because you do have that extra flexibility with the guys who are on your bench. Now, David, are you back?
I think so. Yeah, I don't know if
you think you are back again. So you dropped out again there, but everything looks all right now. It sounds a little bit different. So I think we should be right to go now. And I was talking a bit of fantasy strategy on Durant there. I think we'll cover a little bit more on Durant later. Let's talk about the additions to this team of the Thunder. And there's really not much to talk about, is there? The only real guy who's added to the roster that finished last season is 2014 first round draft choice, Josh Huestis. And he doesn't factor to be much of a contributor this season, does he?
No. I think they're projecting long term that he'll be the backup for Durant, but at this point in time, it doesn't seem like he'll get many minutes. He might spend some time with their D-League affiliate again, but I think at this point he's not going to get much playing time. But you also have to take into consideration campaign. He was their 14th pick in this summer's draft, so he's slotted to be the third point guard on the roster, so we'll see if he'll get any playing time at this point either.
Yeah, campaign's an interesting guy for me. I think he projects really well from a fantasy point of view, but he's in a situation where he's just not going to get minutes this season. Unless an injury happens to DJ Augustine or to Russell Westbrook, then he's forced into a role. To me, he's someone that if you're looking into a fantasy situation, you're investing 3 years into the future, because he's a guy that projects to me in a similar situation to Reggie Jackson. He's not the same player as Reggie Jackson, but he could be that, you know, when he's headed towards the end of his rookie deal, he's going to be, you know, clamoring for playing time and forcing his way into a situation where the Thunder might have to trade him or someone's going to max him out in restricted free agency, because I think he has a ton of ability. He's going to be a very good scorer, but he's never going to get that opportunity in Oklahoma City. Now, if Westbrook decides to leave in free agency, it's a different situation. But I don't ever see him becoming a real relevant player for 2 to 3 years, maybe even more, if he gets that opportunity on another team, because it just there's no clear pathway for him in minutes in Oklahoma City. Huestis, the same thing. I don't see him being able to contribute a huge amount. Even if he was to start, he feels like a guy who would start similar to what Solomon Hill did last year for Indiana. He'd start and play minutes, but he doesn't accumulate any stats. He can be a bit of a defender, but he's not going to be a great scorer. There's not a lot to love about Josh Huestis. He wasn't projected really as a first round draft choice last season, and a lot of the reason why he was picked in the first round, of what people have said, is because he was willing to accept to go to the D League for 1 year, and then start his contract the year after. Guys that left this team, how do you feel about the departure of Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
How do you feel about the departure of Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones from this team?
I'm torn about it, because I think I speak for a lot of Thunder fans in that they had hoped that they'd realize their potential with the team, but that was never going to be the case. There were some thoughts that maybe they were just simply too immature, that they didn't fit the overall kind of culture of winning basketball for the Thunder, and that's why they might have been moved. They weren't going to get any kind of significant playing time there. Basically, with, you know, stars like Westbrook and Durant already in place there, they weren't going to carry the bulk of the scoring load. They showed flashes over the course of their tenure with Oklahoma City, but just never enough to really warrant significant playing time. And I think for Jeremy Lamb, he was always going to be behind the eight ball, so to speak, because of the whole James Harden trade. There was a stigma attached to him as far as, what they gave up in order to acquire a player like him. And so he was never going to live up to that kind of, speculation. So, I'm not sorry to see them go, and I wish them the very best in whatever opportunities. Now, I've already heard that Perry Jones might not even make the Boston Celtics roster, so it's interesting to see whether or not he even has a future in the NBA ahead of him. All the potential in the world, but, without any playing time, it's tough to tell.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. At this stage, unless the Celtics make a trade, I would say he's probably going to be the 16th man and won't make that roster. He could catch on somewhere else. He could find himself in Philadelphia, and they could end up giving him 25 minutes a night. But the guy that bothers me the most, I think, is Jeremy Lamb. You mentioned immaturity issues and that sort of stuff, but I just feel that Scott Brooks never really gave him much of an opportunity to actually play. When they had a need at shooting guard, they had a guy that was a lottery pick at shooting guard who you would have thought they would have liked to have get some minutes into or some exposure to playing, but it never seemed that they would give him any playing time. They'd play guys like Cephalosha over him, Andre Robertson over him. Anybody that they could find that could be basically a zero on the court would play ahead of Jeremy Lamb. Now, his defense left a little bit to be desired, but I think that he can be a decent role player in the NBA. He can be a guy similar to former Thunder player Kevin Martin, maybe a guy who can hit some threes and can score, not to the same level, but I think that he was underutilized by Brooks, and it's going to be interesting to see how he does in Charlotte now, whether he is able to get onto the court there and produce a bigger role. But that's what he disappointed me in terms of the way that he was used, because I just felt like he was never given an opportunity. And when he did get an opportunity, he actually played fairly well. You would have watched more Thunder games than me, but when you saw him on the court, did you think that this guy is showing something?
There were times when he did show those flashes, but then I think that's the overall inconsistency that led to his minute production being kind of limited. You know, you never knew exactly what you were going to get out of him from a night-to-night basis. So that was obviously a problem. You know, it's weird because now all of a sudden in Charlotte, he's probably not going to be a starter either. He's going to come off the bench again, probably backing up Nicholas Batum. So he might not get much of an opportunity there either. And so he just might be one of those guys that we'll never know whether or not he could have had or could have reached his full potential there. But I think a lot of Thunder fans were frustrated with the way Brooks managed his minutes, and that's probably why Brooks is no longer with the team. And, you know, one of the things that they always held against him was how he utilized players on the bench, how he put a lot of the pressure on Kevin Durant and Westbrook to produce. There wasn't really a set offense, and you know, Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones both were kind of casualties of Brooks' coaching style.
Let's talk about the coaching now. What were your thoughts on Brooks? Were you frustrated by him in terms of the way that he used his starting lineups, his rotations, his coaching style? Did you think that he was harshly dealt with when he was fired? Do you think he deserved more time because of the injuries? How did you feel about Scotty Brooks' tenure in Oklahoma City?
It's tough to gauge it exactly because I think he certainly had his limitations, but I think he did a fairly good job. I think you take into consideration the way he was able to develop young talent, and you know, you could say that guys like Durant, Westbrook, Ibaka, and others, you know, were just immensely talented, and that's where they were able to become the stars that they have. But you have to give him some credit for helping guide them along the process. So he certainly did an admirable job in that regard. But there were problems, like you mentioned, his rotations, his lack of offensive sets, not much creativity there. So to say that he was, you know, ousted unfairly is difficult also because you have to take into consideration Durant's free agency. They had to make a change, I think, in order to just show that they're willing to change, that they're willing to do something different there. At first, I was kind of torn about it because I think Brooks is a pretty solid person overall, a good guy, but that's not necessarily enough to keep a guy like Durant there. They had to show some kind of a willingness to go past the level that he had taken him to. They had kind of plateaued a little bit there. So I think with the hiring of Billy Donovan, they were showing that they were willing to go to that next level, which is possibly an NBA championship.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to bring it on to now, is the hiring of Billy Donovan. We had a question come in through the Basketball Monster Forum from Anna. He said, what effect do you expect the new coach to have on KD and Westbrook? So we don't know how Donovan's going to transition necessarily to the NBA. He hasn't done it before. But how do you see knowing, you know, what you know about Donovan now? You're located in Florida. I don't know if you're a Gators fan. But what do you expect Donovan and what he's able to do? How is that going to impact KD and Westbrook? Is it going to be positive for them? Are they going to be limited in what he runs? I know that they're obviously awesome players and a coach is not going to have a big impact, but there's going to be a slight change. So how do you see it happening?
I think it's going to be nothing but positive, to be honest with you. I think as far as his ability to implement a new offense, certainly something much more creative than whatever Brooks was ever to implement, it should be very creative, using a lot of screens. That's the kind of offense he ran while he was with the University of Florida, and he enjoyed, you know, quite a bit of success during the 19 years he was with that particular program. So I see it being very beneficial. And you have to take into consideration that he kind of followed a Steve Kerr type model as far as hiring some very quality assistant coaches, guys that will help him, you know, manage minutes more effectively, deal with the kind of varying personalities that he has on the team. He's done a great job so far of reaching out to all the players. He was there in Los Angeles when they had those informal workouts during the summer, and he was there at Summer League. He's clearly made himself a very regular presence on the team just in the short time that he's been here. I think it's something necessary for the Thunder to take that next step, and so I expect him to really blossom there. He's one of the early favorites for a coaching of the year candidate, so I think that's probably where we'll wind up seeing him throughout the course of the season.
Okay, so that's a positive news, obviously, for all Thunder fans and for anyone who's looking at these guys in their fantasy drafts that we're not going to see any sort of dip in what Westbrook and Durant are able to produce, obviously injuries aside. It's going to be a positive, and it's probably going to be a positive for other guys on the team as well, not just those two players. So you have Ibaka and guys even like Anthony Morrow, Enes Kanter, other players, because basically when Scotty Brooks ran, whoever was playing as a shooting guard was basically a zero. And the guy that was playing as center for a lot of the time with Kendrick Perkins was pretty much a zero as well. But I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. And that some of that's personnel related with Enes Kanter there. Maybe Anthony Morrow gets a bigger role. Maybe Deion Waiters does something. Maybe Kyle Singler plays as the two, out there. He's an extremely good 3-point shooter, Kyle Singler. He shot 40% from three last year. He can be out there providing that option. Him and Anthony Morrow give them a completely different look rather than putting out the defensive guy like Robertson, like Cephalosha that Brooks used to do. And that, to me, that opens up what the team can do offensively as well. Now, we've talked a little bit about some of the draft choices from this team campaign from this season. Josh Huestis from last season. There's a couple of other guys who were drafted in the last 2 years on this roster. Takari Johnson was picked this season. He's probably going to go to the D League from what I'm hearing. Now, do you hear anything different?
No, I think that's probably where he'll wind up being able to develop. He was there at Summer League. I was able to watch him closely. He's got some potential. He's a very big body, but he's a little slow. His footwork is solid. He was kind of buried in that University of Kentucky deep front court there behind all the different players that they had on the roster. So he never really got a chance to shine. But I think he's going to be a real plus eventually. I think he definitely has a future in the NBA just because of his size and his work ethic. It's something the coaches kept talking about regularly as far as his ability to keep grinding, work in the low post. And he was a very active rebounder. So I see a good future for him. It just doesn't seem like it's going to be with the Thunder this particular season.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I think that he got a ton of potential. You said how big he is. He's a huge guy. He's going to have that defensive potential. And he was really limited. We didn't see what he could do at Kentucky. We know who was there. He was behind Cauley Stein. He was behind Karl Anthony Towns. So he was limited in what he can do there. I think that he is going to have some sort of role in the NBA. It might not ever be with this team, or it might be limited to a 20-minute a night role, but he's going to have Enes Kanter ahead of him. He's going to have Steven Adams ahead of him. And he's potentially going to have this guy, the next guy I'm going to talk about, Mitch McGarry, who's going to be ahead of him as well. Now, McGarry is someone who I really like from a fantasy point of view. He's a tremendous guy at racking up stats. He does that very quickly in very limited minutes. He's able to get good steal numbers, good block numbers, score really efficiently, get big, good point totals, get rebounds, but the minutes for him, they feel like they're consistently going to be limited in Oklahoma City. So he's going to need an injury to get onto the court and to be able to produce enough numbers to be able to use. But if he does, then in daily fantasy leagues, he becomes someone that you want to really smash at a low salary. You can add him into your standard leagues if he gets a starting role. Like if Kanter goes down, well, even then Adams would probably start. But if Ibaka goes down and they have to put McGarry in, which they did at times last year, he'd have some big games, but he'd have a couple of quiet ones. What did you think of watching McGarry last season? Were you impressed with him?
Absolutely. I am right there with you. I am a huge McGarry fan. I think he's an incredible spark plug, really energetic. I mean, you have to think about where he was at the start of the season. He was dealing with a lingering injury. He was a little overweight. He was raw, but he came in there once he was able to finally get some consistent playing time, I think around January, and he was an immediate factor in their late season playoff push. And I think you look at where he is right now, he's dropped about 30 pounds. From what I saw up close of him in summer league play, he's a hell of a playmaker, a very active passer, always looking ahead. He can run the fast break. He's a pretty good shooter from mid-range, yep, too, something that a lot of people didn't see from him early in the season. But I think he's going to be a real factor sometime in the future. He's a guy you love having on the roster just because he's so active, because he's so willing to participate. He told me personally that he saw himself kind of eventually filling that Nick Collison role as the active guy off the bench and being able to do whatever it takes. He really enjoys doing the dirty work, so to speak. And so I'm a big fan of McGarry's game, to be honest with you. I hope he gets some consistent playing time, but you're absolutely right. I just don't see how, with as loaded a team as they have this year, I'm just not sure exactly where he'll fit in as far as overall minutes is concerned.
Yeah, so he's going to have Ibaka, Kanter, Steven Adams ahead of him. Look, Durant will place a little bit of four as well. And then you do have Nick Collison there as well as another guy who is going to take his minutes. I would love for McGarry to get most of Collison's minutes. That's probably not going to happen. Collison's still signed for another couple of seasons, I believe, and he seems to have a permanent role on this team, no matter what production he actually provides. But McGarry, in terms of what he's able to produce on the court, far exceeds what Collison's able to do, and he's a guy that you always need to keep an eye on with the Thunder. So if an injury does happen in that front court and you see that, okay, McGarry's going to be in line for even 25 to 27 minutes, even if he plays that first big man off the bench role and you know, plays both forward and center, he's going to be able to rack up stats because he does it at a very, very high rate. If I have a look at the numbers that he's projected to get at the moment on Basketball Monster, he's projected the same sort of minutes as Nick Collison, but his numbers are almost 75% higher than what Collison's numbers are, because he just accumulates those numbers at such a higher rate. Defensive steals, blocks, rebounds, scoring, and you're right, his shooting is something that's really underrated. So he's someone that if he went to a different situation, you could see some tremendous numbers from Mitch McGarry. I'm a big fan of him. Let's talk breakout players. The way I frame these breakout questions, David, is talk about guys who might become go from a good player to a great player, or someone who might become from going completely irrelevant into a really decent and valuable role player and contributor. Do you see someone on this team that fits either one of those categories?
I think most Thunder fans kind of have pinned their hopes at this point for Deion Waiters being that person. I think it's somebody at the shooting guard position. It could be, as you mentioned before, either Singler or Morrow. But they're kind of – I think Morrow is very limited as far as, you know, all he really provides is that incredible outside shooting that he does. Singler is more of a versatile player. He can defend decently. He's a decent rebounder at times. But his stats last season were very disappointing for most Thunder fans. So I wouldn't expect him to get a bulk of the playing time. I think Deion Waiters is that guy, especially in a contract season. You have to take that into consideration. Now, that could work against him because he might be trying to do too much, as he often does. But he certainly has all the tools, and that's where the frustration has played as far as his tenure in Cleveland, even for half a season with Oklahoma City. There's that, you know, willingness to do too much, always cut to the hoop and not be able to finish at the rim. You know, fans have always railed against him yelling "and one" as consistently as he does, always looking for the foul, even though he doesn't get fouled very often. So it's kind of a frustrating thing. He's had all the tools, all the potential, but, you know, I'm wondering whether or not Donovan here can really make his mark, or maybe Monty Williams or even Maurice Cheeks, you know, all these guys on the coaching staff, if they can really work with Wade.
David's dropped out again as he's talking. Deion Waiters, don't know what's happening with his connection there, so I do apologize for the odd
starting lineup.
Oh, he's back. You dropped out for about 5 seconds there, David. But okay, Deion Waiters is he's definitely an interesting prospect. He regressed significantly last season from what he was able to do, because he'd been an okay player. Like, he's obviously a pain and he's a very easy target to be the butt of people's jokes, but he regressed significantly. In Cleveland, he was useful, and in Cleveland before LeBron arrived the couple of seasons before that, when he was given the opportunity, when Kyrie would be out and he was given an opportunity to run an offense, he actually did a pretty good job of it. He was able to get some assists, he was able to set up guys. As much as we think of Waiters as being a chucker, he was able to distribute the ball and he was quite effective. So he's not as bad as what people make him out to be, because as I said, he is an easy target. But again, I don't see what's going to happen with him on this team. I don't see how they're going to utilize him best. When they've got, you know, they have Westbrook at the one and Durant at the three. We know what those guys can do. And then to me, just using Morrow at the two he is limited, but especially offensively, when KD's got it and he's double teamed and Westbrook's driving and he's drawing all this attention, a kick out to Morrow when he's hitting 44% of his threes it's almost automatic. And then you've got Singler who can go out there and hit 40% of his threes. And Singler can also provide some defense. The guy that I look at as a breakout is probably Singler, because I think that he was definitely, it was definitely disappointing when he came across to Oklahoma City, but I think with the new coach and him having a potentially a different role on this team. I think that he could become a very solid guy who gets 20 minutes off the bench. He can go out there, and said he hits threes. He can rebound pretty well. He's a very good defender. Yeah, and we've seen the Thunder use a lot of defenders at the two, but this guy can actually defend and provide offense as well. So I'm a little bit interested in what Singler can do. It's probably only for deeper fantasy leagues, and it depends on what you want to do with building your team. But if you're counting 3-point percentage, he's going to be a higher rated player in that sort of area. So he's someone that I think that can have a little bit of a different role. And the fact that he's going to be a little bit more stable, instead of just playing there for 2 months, he's going to have a full off season working with these guys, getting himself in the new system. And I think that he's a very smart player who can adjust to things. And I think that he'll be a great guy to have a look at in the deeper leagues. And you know, if the minutes come his way, he could start to provide some nice streaming value for standard leagues.
Yeah, it's something certainly to look out for. It's a good problem to have for Billy Donovan. Yep. You know, as deep as this team is, you never know where the minutes are going to go. But there's certainly a lot of potential there for a lot of different players to rack up some good numbers.
Yeah, look, and that's the guy we haven't really mentioned is DJ Augustine as well, who can play. He can play alongside Westbrook to a degree. Now the defense would be probably limited, but Westbrook could play off the ball. Some Augustine can set guys up. He can hit threes too, and that could work for stretches of time as well, as those two guys play together and Augustine sets up Westbrook sets up Augustine and the other players, and I think that could work for time as well. And then there's campaign in the mix as well, and that's why he's going to be extremely limited, because Augustine's going to get minutes, Singler, Morrow, Waiters, they're all going to get minutes in preference to what Payne is going to get, and it wouldn't be surprised to see Payne have some pretty significant stretches in the D League this season. Now, I want to talk fantasy drafts and sleeper players. Kevin Durant is currently being drafted as the 6th overall player in fantasy leagues at the moment. And I mentioned earlier when you dropped out that there's a risk associated with it. But I think at pick 6, that's probably going a little bit too far. I think 5 is probably the right spot, maybe even 4, depending on, again, it depends on how risk averse you are. But going by what you said, you've got no concerns about Durant being ready to go. So if you're able to pick him at pick 6, it could end up being a very solid pick. Do you think that there's any reason whatsoever to be concerned about? I know you've answered it already, but is there any concern? I just really want to get to the bottom of it.
You know, not from his overall health standpoint. I think he's going to be ready to roll. And I mean, I think they're going to manage him as well as possible as far as limiting his overall minutes. So I expect him to be a major contributor next season.
Okay, so we're pretty much locked in with Durant getting some decent minutes, and I think that at pick 6, you're not calling him a sleeper, but he could end up being a top 3 sort of player. The other way I want to go is looking at guys who are probably overvalued heading into the season, and the one that stands out to me is Deion Waiters, who is currently got an ADP of 136, which is extremely high to me. I can't see Deion Waiters being able to get anywhere close to that sort of value, even if he gets decent minutes. Like last year, he played 28 minutes and he was the 214th ranked player. He only averaged 12 points. He hit less than a 3, 2 assists, 2.5 rebounds. He got a steal a game, but he didn't shoot his free throws well, didn't shoot from the field well, a real killer in those areas. I don't see the upside in Deion Waiters at that point. Now, he is playing for a contract. Do you think that is something that will motivate him to have a career season?
Absolutely. I think he has an opportunity here to really make a strong statement with his season, whether or not he's finally able to turn it around and become the mature player that everybody expects out of him. For somebody as talented as he is, he's already talked very optimistically about working with his new coaching staff and being able to take it to another level. He's apparently lost some weight. He's been training hard over the offseason. So he made a stop at Summer League as well. And he, you know, he was a positive influence there. So I'm hopeful, as a many Thunder fan are, but I'm not sure what to expect out of him, to be honest with you. I think I would say that I'm cautiously optimistic about his ability to produce next season.
If you had to make an assumption of what sort of minutes he would be looking at, do you think that he's low 20s, mid 20s, high 20s? Where do you see him fitting in playing time, whether it's as a sixth man or whether it's as a starter? What sort of minutes do you see him getting?
I'd say low 20s, and I don't know if he's necessarily a sixth man at this point, just because you have so many different options off the bench, and Morrow's ability to space the floor might be a better option than Waiters at this point.
Well, who do you think starts at the two then?
I think it's Andre Roberson.
Okay. You think he starts again?
Absolutely. I think with Cantor's defensive weaknesses being something that a lot of teams can exploit, I think you want to use a guy like Roberson who can, you know, put a little pressure on the perimeter. I think, sir, you know, obviously Ibaka is a plus defender. So you want to have a good balance there. And I think somebody like Roberson provides that. And I think you can probably make him a positive player in offense, if not necessarily an overly productive one. He can shoot somewhat from the corner, and he can finish well at the rim. So, I mean, there is some ability there. It's just a matter of him being able to develop it a little bit more fully. You have to, you know, take into consideration how weird his playing time was before last season. You know, he wasn't expected to be much of a factor, and then all of a sudden he's thrust into the starting lineup by Scott Brooks. So I think it's definitely something that a lot of Thunder fans are hopeful that he'll again be a factor as a starter.
Yeah, you're right. He came out of nowhere to be a starter last season, really. He was playing in the D League and then he'd get called up and then he'd start. He only ended up playing 19 minutes a game last season, even though he started a big chunk of games. And I think what a lot of people don't realize about Roberson is that he basically played as a power forward in college and he was a really good rebounder. Now he's coming to the NBA and he's playing as the two. And that's why his rebounding numbers were so good. He averaged almost 4 rebounds in 19 minutes. And for a shooting guard, that's exceptionally high. And his game is built on defense. Like, he also had 0.8 steals in that time. So look, if his numbers were at 30 minutes, and we're talking about a guy that's getting, you know, 7 rebounds, 1.5 steals, maybe only 7 or 8 points, but some numbers that can be useful in fantasy leagues just by that rebounding and steals numbers, and a guy you can put into a shooting guard slot and stream in and out. I'm not as high on him. You watch more Thunder than I do. I don't know how Donovan's going to run. But in terms of Donovan at Florida, is he more offensively minded? Is he more focusing on defense? How did you see his playing style and how he would want to run things? Or is he just going to try and leave things not untouched, but in a similar flow to the way that Brooks had them?
No, I think, like I said before, I think he'll be a little bit more creative offensively, but he certainly did put a lot of focus at Florida on defense, and I think that's certainly something that he's going to bring with him to the NBA. So it's interesting to see whether or not he'll be able to turn a guy like Roberson into a plus scorer, you know, and maybe kind of mitigate Cantor's defensive weaknesses there. It's going to be a real challenge for him, but I expect that to be something to watch out for most of the season.
Let's head on to the next section, David. We're looking at players whose production is limited by their playing time. And if they were to get themselves into, say, a 30-minute situation, they would really excel in terms of being able to put up numbers and be a positive contributor on the court. Who's the guy that you look at that might be someone we've already spoken about, but someone who we look at on this team whose upside is limited by the situation they're currently in?
I can't see anybody that fits that role better than McGarry. I mean, we talked about him very positively, but I can't say enough positive things about him because he just goes in there with an incredible amount of energy. He hustles. He works as hard as anybody I've seen up close, and I think a lot of Thunder fans really enjoy watching him play because he is very capable. You know, I didn't realize he was such a good playmaker, but you know, watching him at Summer League, he was very impressive, a good passer, always pretty aware of what he was doing, a smart guy, you know, high basketball IQ, as they say. So given the right situation, he would be a very productive player, I think.
Last season, he played just 15 minutes a game, but his per 36 right. numbers put him at 15 points to over 12 rebounds, over a steal, over a block a game. And that's obviously extremely productive. Not many players in the NBA are able to put up those sort of numbers. Now, he's probably not going to be in a situation to get 36 minutes, but 15 and 12 with over a steal and over a block is pretty rare company. And we just need for him to be able to produce his numbers. He needs an opportunity. Now, Thunder fans probably don't want him to get into that situation because it means that Ibaka's gone down, or it means that Durant's gone down, or it means that you know, the big investment in Enes Kanter has blown up with an injury or whatever has happened, and McGarry's getting minutes. But it's something that if he was in that situation, I don't think the Thunder are going to be, they're not going to be completely distraught, because he is going to be able to produce and he is going to be a very good player for this team. the guy that I see in a similar situation, I think campaigns in that sort of situation, I think that his ability to score, his ability to distribute the ball, he can get steals, he can hit threes. He's obviously going to have rookie issues, but if for some reason he was thrust into a bigger role, I think that he could become a very, very useful fantasy player. So if something happened to Westbrook, that would obviously go with Augustine, but that would put Payne into a role where he's playing 20 to 25 minutes, maybe playing some one, and then, you know, by mid-season, if something was to happen in that situation, I could see Payne, you know, taking over a starting job. So he's someone to watch out for, but every number that I've had for him projects out really well in terms of how he's going to play in the NBA if he's given an opportunity. But again, he's just limited by who's ahead of him on the roster.
Yeah, and I'm also concerned that he's a little undersized. He's pretty thin. So you wonder how he's going to be able to hold other point guards, you know, at the defensive, you know, from a defensive standpoint more than anything.
Yeah, that is true. He's not very big. He could bulk up, but his frame is just not a very wide frame, especially when you compare him to someone like Westbrook out on the court. He's going to look, if he was to match up against Westbrook, you'd be worried that he's just going to get destroyed athletically. Right. Not that he's not a bad athlete, he's just not physically strong enough, but that can come time in an NBA weight room. Well, he wasn't at a big time college program, so not saying that Murray State didn't have a great athletic program or anything like that, but it's a different situation coming from Murray State to Oklahoma City in terms of, you know, nutrition and weight training and all that sort of stuff, which that might take a year or so to come to fruition, but it's something that definitely can make a difference to him in that sort of different environment. Now, a guy we've alluded to a couple of times, David, in this show, is Enes Kanter. I want to get your take on him, how you thought he fit in the team last season, what his play was like, and what you thought of the contract extension. Let's just talk everything Enes Kanter.
All right. You know, I was glad to see him acquired last season because although Perkins was a fan favorite, he wasn't really productive at that point. So giving up a guy like Perkins finally after all these years in Scott Brooks' system and being able to get a guy like Kanter who could produce something out of the center position, something that the Thunder historically haven't had, was definitely a blessing. So I think a lot of Thunder fans were very positive about Kanter and having him on the roster. He did very well. He played very, very well with Westbrook in the pick and roll situation. They seemed like they had an immediate chemistry there. So in the late season playoff push, it was certainly something that a lot of Thunder fans were optimistic about moving forward. You know, clearly he has his defensive issues. When Ibaka went down late in the season, those were definitely exploited, and I think he exposed, and you really saw how weak he could be defensively. So it's something to look out for. I see him being productive next season. I think you take into consideration the fact that both he and Ibaka are very good outside shooters. I know it's just something that Kanter was starting to develop late last season or early last season when he was with the Utah Jazz, but he's a very good perimeter shooter. He shot decently, you know, not much, but when he was with Oklahoma City, but it's something certainly to look out for. Maybe that's a new wrinkle in Donovan's offense, is that he's able to capitalize on Kanter's outside shooting, and that's something that he'll continue to develop. As far as the overall contract is concerned, I think the Thunder didn't have any choice. They couldn't simply let him walk, and the market dictated that he was going to get that kind of a deal as a restricted free agent. He certainly utilized Portland very effectively in that regard. The Trailblazers are a divisional rival, and they were certainly able to force the Thunder's hand to pay as much as they wound up doing for Enes Kanter. So it's unfortunate, and it could be something to watch out for in the future when they have to re-sign guys like Ibaka and Westbrook and Durant, of course, next season. So, you know, he could be a player on the move in the next couple of seasons if they're looking to free up some salary cap space. And you wonder, as the NBA shifts to smaller lineups, whether or not a guy like Kanter even warrants that kind of salary. But it was necessary this past offseason.
I think that's 100% correct, that they had to do it. As much as you might hate looking at that number and thinking Enes Kanter's a max guy, they had to do it. They'd made the move to get him. They're trying to build this thing now while they know they've got every piece in place, and the future is uncertain for Durant. It's uncertain for Westbrook. We don't know what these guys are going to do over the next couple of seasons, and Kanter gives them a chance to win. Now, his defensive liabilities are well, they're evident. To a degree, I think that sometimes the narrative goes too far on Kanter and that this guy is garbage, he can't defend, when in all reality, he's one of the better offensive big men in the league. His array of offensive moves and ability to score is, there's not many guys who are at his size who can produce what he's able to produce in terms of offensively. That is, you know, obviously balanced out by his defense, but a lot of the narrative goes out, like, Kanter's garbage, he can't defend anyone, he can't defend anyone, but there's also not many guys who can actually defend him. And he sometimes will take one or two guys to actually slow him down. And even then, it's not going to happen. We saw him putting up a ridiculous run of numbers towards the end of last season when he was the primary option. They, aside from Westbrook, the primary front court option at the 3, 4, and 5, he was basically taking everything down low and they still couldn't stop him. Now, with Durant back, with the Barker back, it's going to take a hit on his numbers, but his offensive production is still going to be there. He's going to be immeasurably better than what Kendrick Perkins was able to do at center in terms of actually giving them someone who can score, who can shoot, who can use post moves, who can do all that sort of stuff. And I think Kanter's going to be the leading rebounder on this team. He'll probably be the third highest scorer on this team behind Durant and Westbrook. And I think that there's a lot to like about him still for fantasy. He's got an average draft position of just inside the top 100. And I think that if you're picking him around that spot, it's decent. I think that you're going to get that sort of return back, and you might even have him slip because he doesn't provide those steals and block numbers. You might see people letting him slip to outside the top 100. And then if that's the case, I'd be all over him because he's going to get the scoring, the rebounds, and you're going to get really solid percentages from him as well. So I'm a bit of an Enes Kanter fan because I like what he's able to do offensively, and I just feel like he's, I'm not, overrated is not the right word. The defensive liabilities definitely cloud everyone's overall judgment on him.
Yeah, I agree. It's certainly something that's exaggerated in the past. I'm curious in that you think that he'll surpass Serge Ibaka as the third leading scorer. Why do you see that Ibaka taking a step back there?
I think Ibaka had an opportunity last season when Durant and Westbrook were out to really take on the mantle as being a scorer, and he just didn't grasp it. He went outside, he started hitting threes, but it took away from his overall game. I think that with Kanter there, Ibaka will be reduced to, I think that they're going to draw up plays for a big man, they're going to draw them up for Kanter. They're not going to do it for Ibaka because Kanter has more flexibility in what he can do. He can hit an outside shot, he can, draw a double team, he can, do a post move, an up and under, a spin, a hook, all that sort of stuff, where Ibaka's not at the same level. I think that if I was looking at it, I would want to give a play down low. I would want to give it to Kanter offensively and sort of run them you could run one guy in, one guy out. They both can hit a deeper shot. They both can hit a three as well. But I think I would want Ibaka to concentrate more of his energy on getting back for defense and have Kanter as more of the offensive option. So I think that that's the way that they would want to run it. Do you see that Ibaka ends up scoring more than Kanter?
It's tough to say because I think you're certainly right. I think he's going to be reduced almost to kind of just a perimeter player because I think Kanter certainly provides a better low score, a low post threat offensively. So you wonder whether or not somebody like Ibaka, his numbers are going to dip consistently as far as his rebounds on the offensive end are going to dip considerably with Kanter down low. And they might just – look to kick it out to Ibaka on the perimeter and have him, hit that 3-point shot offensively. So, he got a lot of points previously, garbage points, rebounds, things like that. So you wonder whether or not that's going to be not the case next season with Kanter kind of clogging up the lane a little bit, because he's obviously, like you've said, a more gifted offensive player in the low post. So it's certainly something to look out for. But, he's rated very highly. Ibaka is a big part of the Thunder moving forward. So I think it's certainly, again, another great option to have. It's rare that you have two really good scoring options there that can provide that kind of stretch offense. But it's certainly something to watch out for as far as, fantasy leagues and things like that.
The way we've got it at the moment, sort of a basketball monster, is that Enes Kanter's probably projected at about 14.5 points and Ibaka's at about 12 to 13 points. So it's not a big difference. But I do imagine that Ibaka takes a slight drop back because I think that Kanter will be the preferred option because I think he's a better offensive player in my opinion. I think he can do more. He can actually help Westbrook and Durant as well in that if they dump it into him, he demands attention. He demands guys to come to him. And there aren't many guys who can handle him one-on-one offensively if he's in the right spot. And with those other two guys out there on the perimeter, the ability for him to get to the right spot is going to be increased as well. So I really think it's going to be interesting to see how all these four guys work together. But I do think the cancer becomes that third option. We haven't really talked Westbrook much at all today. There's been last season was a little bit different with no KD, but previously we'd heard just a lot of negativity toward Westbrook about, you know, just give Durant the ball, he's the best player, don't think that you're the best player on this team, all that sort of talk that of Westbrook, you know, providing bad Russ moments, all that sort of stuff. What's your take on Westbrook from watching the Thunder? I'm a massive Westbrook fan, and I think that a lot of that stuff was overblown in terms of, you know, the friction between those two or Westbrook doing the wrong thing. Westbrook is he's an elite talent, and I am I'm massively into Russell Westbrook. How do you see it?
I'm right there with you. I think all of that was really exaggerated. There were really no chemistry issues, not from a visible standpoint or otherwise. I don't think there were any rumored frictions between them. Not really, not from any kind of beat reporters or anybody that really saw them interacting on a regular basis. So I think all of that was really overblown. And I think they work really well together. I think there's a good partnership there. And I think they certainly represent a good core moving forward if Kevin Durant should re-sign with the Thunder. And I think Durant's abilities are, like you said, elite. I think he's one of the greatest players in the game today, perhaps one of the greatest scorers or players in NBA history as well. So I think he's certainly a guy you love to watch, and all that stuff about not being a point guard, all that stuff is so over exaggerated at this point. I think, you know, the positions and the way that they're defined are changing continuously, especially in today's game. Who cares what position he plays? He contributes, he does whatever he can, and I'm a huge fan of Westbrook's game.
That's exactly right in terms of the position. Like, who cares? Who cares if he's a point guard? Who cares if he's a shooting guard? He averaged over 8.5 assists a game last season. He also averaged almost 7.5 rebounds, 28 points, over 2 steals. Like, the numbers are crazy. And we hear, you know, Westbrook, he's a ball hog. He's not passing it. Well, in order to have a stretch of triple doubles like he did, you got to pass. And you have to get 10 assists a game to get a triple double. And he did it for that many games in a row. And he's one of the leading assist guys in the league, as well as one of the leading scorers, and that combination doesn't happen very often. I think that he's fantastic. He's clearly my favorite player on this team. As good as Durant is, I'm a huge Westbrook fan. He's currently got an average draft position in fantasy leagues of 6 as well, same as Durant. He's going to take a hit. We've seen him with Durant before, but a lot of people are projecting, okay, Westbrook's not going to be the same because Durant's back. He's going to take a big tumble down, but we've seen them play before together, and when they have, they've both been top 5 fantasy guys anyway. So it's not like we're going to see Westbrook come back and become like Kevin Love and go 16 points and 6 assists and 4 rebounds. It's just seriously not going to happen. We've seen these two. Look, granted, we haven't seen them with an Enes Kanter mixed in there as well, but Westbrook's going to do what he does, Durant's going to do what he does, and they are going to be the two primary focuses of this team. And it's not going to be that Westbrook is going to drop from 28 points down to 20 or 18. It's just not going to happen. His numbers are going to stay ridiculously high. That transitions me into the next question, David. Who is your favorite player on this team?
I think it's Russell Westbrook. I think he's just so energetic. I started really covering the Thunder very closely last season. You know, like any NBA fan, you kind of have to watch them when they're on national television. But I really started watching them much more closely last season, and I just became enamored with the way he attacks the game. He's a constant threat to score, but he's just so energetic. He doesn't quit for anything. I mean, you even saw that last season when he had his face broken. I mean, he literally had his face caved in. You saw a huge dent in his cheekbone, and he barely took one. I don't think he even took one game off. I think he went in there the next game with a mask on there, ready to play, ready to mix it up with anybody else. It's that kind of commitment, the energy. I mean, it's very effective and infectious. You know, you love watching him play, and he's certainly a lot of fun to watch. And you know, he's producing at a high level, and all that other stuff, all that other talk that, you know, we were discussing earlier. You know, you forget all about that watching him play, because if you can't enjoy watching Westbrook play, then I don't know why you watch basketball at all.
No, exactly. He is super fun to watch. I think we all remember that situation last year when the Thunder played the Pistons and he had that dunk on Josh Smith running down the lane. It was just the most aggressive finish I've pretty much ever seen on a basketball court. It was just like, this guy he's on a different level to everyone else athletically. I think of how big he is, and he's not that big. He's 6'3", which is that's my height, and I see myself as tall, but in comparison to NBA players, I'm tiny. But he can go out there, and he's just a superior athlete to probably every person in the league. Is there anyone who's a better athlete than him in the NBA?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, you have to kind of give a guy like LeBron some consideration just because of what he can do at his size and the speed with which he moves. But as far as overall explosiveness, I don't think there's a player like him. I've likened Westbrook in the past to Michael Jordan. I don't think it's an unfair comparison. I know a lot of people say Jordan's the greatest of all time, but part of what made him so great was his ability to get past other athletes at the time in the mid 80s. They were so much, the game was so much slower, and a guy like Jordan came in there and played above the rim, and was able to explode past defenders. You look at Westbrook, and it's a very similar attack style, and it's a lot of fun to watch. And you're absolutely right. I think 6'3 is a very generous listing for him. I've stood next to him. I'm also 6'3. It's not quite 6'3", let me tell you. So the fact that he can do what he does, and knowing my size, and I can't come anywhere near matching that level of athleticism, is frightening to me.
Yeah, that's exactly how I, because I can put myself in a frame of reference at being 6'2". The NBA guys, pretty much, if whatever they're listed at, you can take an inch and a half off, except if they get up to, if they get closer to 7 foot, they don't want to be higher than 7 foot. So if they're actually 7'1", they'll put themselves at 7 foot. They always want to be down there. There's this range that they're going to bump their height up until they get to 7 foot, and then they're going to bump themselves down. I stood next to John Wall this last offseason. He's listed at about the same height, and he was my height, if not marginally shorter. So they're all just that little bit shorter. And to me, I go out there and I stand on a court and I look at the rim and I go, okay, that's pretty high. I can touch it. And then you watch Westbrook, who goes up there and puts his head over it, jumping through guys. And I go, it's ludicrous. And it makes you just respect it even more. And you just sit there and go, this is incredible. And I imagine that Westbrook's a guy that no matter what sport he would play, if he had played it from a young age, he would dominate at it, because his athletic ability is just, it's so great. I imagine him playing Australian football. I don't know if you've ever seen Australian football, David, but I imagine if he was to play that, I salivate at thinking of what he'd be able to do at that height and that speed and that jumping ability. Anything that he put his mind to, like if he was to play soccer, the same thing, he'd just be in and out. And then compared to all the other sports, he's bigger than everyone as well. Like, he comes in taller than everybody, but also faster than everybody. So he's a freak. All right.
He is.
The next question we look at is your favorite all-time player for this team. Now, I don't know how you approach this one, whether you took it as Thunder only, or did you go back into the Sonics days from this franchise? How did you approach your favorite all-time player on this team?
I'm going to cheat a little bit and go back to the Seattle Sonics days.
That's good. I did as well.
Not only that, but I'm going to cheat a little bit more and go with the tandem of Gary Payton and Sean Kemp. I tried separating the two, and I couldn't. You know, to me, they're linked forever. And, you know, Kemp's career was a little bit cut short. You know, he was eventually moved to Cleveland. He put on all that weight after the lockout back in the 90s. But watching them play and watching highlights of them in the past, I mean, how electrifying they were. It was an incredible thing to watch. So, I mean, I've always loved watching those highlights of Gary Payton and Sean Kemp.
Yeah, look, I had Sean Kemp down as my guy as well, so I cheated a bit going back into the Sonics days, but it's not really cheating. It's the same team. But we look at both of these guys, and again, what I like doing when asking everyone about their favorite player all time from this team is going back and looking at some of the old stats that these guys used to put up. You go back and look at Gary Payton. He was the second ranked fantasy guy for three consecutive seasons, through 97, 98 to 99 to 2000, when he was averaging it 20 points a game. He was getting almost 9 assists a game, you know, almost Westbrook style rebounds, he has 6.5 rebounds in one season, 2 steals in a season. He hit over 2 threes in that 99-2000 season. The numbers he was putting up were incredible. We know his reputation as a defender, but he was a very good offensive player as well. He was able to score, he was able to hit threes. and he was able to distribute. And he was a favorite of mine as well growing up too. But Sean Kemp he didn't really seem to fit that era very well. He was just a completely different player to a lot of the players at that time. Obviously, that was the Michael Jordan time. But to have a big man that was as athletic as what he was and would just constantly be just dunking on people's heads basically every game, and you knew you were going to get a highlight from watching a Sean Kemp game. But even him, his fantasy numbers were probably better than what you anticipate. He had a season in 93-94 where he averaged 18 and 11. He got 3 assists a game, which I don't think many people would realize that Sean Kemp was getting 3 assists a game as a big man. He got almost 2 steals, and he got over 2 blocks a game. And he was also a decent free throw shooter. He hit 74% of his free throws and 54% of his shots from the line. I don't think people remembered just how well-rounded his game could be, and producing those numbers in an era where it wasn't necessarily as common to see a guy at 6'10" be able to be that athletic and that fast and dunk all over guys. And those two formed a pretty cool combination. It's disappointing they never got to win a championship, but I'm glad they didn't beat the Bulls, because I'm a Bulls fan. But they were definitely fun. They were one of the most fun teams to watch in the NBA. I don't think many people could have ever said, "Oh, I hate the Sonics." I think they were just really fun to watch. And yeah, throwing other guys on that team, Detlef Schrempf was there as well. He was a fun guy to watch. They were just really exciting to watch. And I'm sure everybody wants Seattle to get a team back at some point, not at the expense of one of the existing teams, but everyone wants the basketball to return to Seattle at some point. David, what else have we got? Anything else you need to mention about the Thunder?
Oh, I just, definitely one of the most interesting teams to follow this upcoming season. I think, with the Kevin Durant free agency kind of hovering over the team, I think it's certainly something to watch for. You wonder whether or not this is a team that might fall apart at some point if injuries set in and they're not as immediately successful as a lot of people expect them to. It's a sink or swim kind of situation there. They could do very, very well, or they could do very badly. You never know exactly what you're going to get. I mean, and I know that the numbers go against that in the sense that this has been historically or over the last few years a very, very good team, and you think about the talent level here. But, they're going to constantly have to answer questions about Durant's free agency. Every team is going to be gunning for him in 2016. A few of them emerge as likely candidates for his services, so it's something certainly to watch out for. And you have to wonder how Billy Donovan is going to be able to respond to that in his first year as a coach. It could work out very well, kind of like Steve Kerr with the Warriors, or it could go very badly. So definitely a lot of storylines to follow during the Thunder season.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season for them, no doubt. And they're, much like we were talking about the old Sonics and how fun they were to watch, the Thunder are hopefully going to be a lot of fun to watch this season. We're going to have Westbrook, we're going to have Durant, we're going to have Ibaka blocking shots, we're going to have Kanter scoring down low, we're going to have whatever Dion Waiters is going to do. There's going to be some interesting stuff. There's going to be Anthony Morrow bombing threes. He's going to have games where he goes off and hits 5 and 6 threes, and that can be exciting watching someone get hot. And then there's the unknown of what Donovan's going to do to this team and how high they're going to go. If you're giving a prediction now, where what seed do you think they finish in, and how are you confident that they're going to be an NBA Finals sort of team? Do you think they've got a chance to win it all? How do you see them?
I see them finishing second in the Western Conference, and I actually have them, and I'm not playing a homer role here, but I actually think that they can win the title this season.
Yep, I've got no problem with saying that as well. I think that they have a massive chance at winning the title. I think that they probably won't get the one seed, but I would be confident they finish ahead of San Antonio this season, because there's going to be disruptions to San Antonio with LaMarcus Aldridge. That might take them a little bit of time, and that might cost them a seed, but I can see the Thunder winning it all. You could see 4 or 5 teams from the West winning it all, basically. I could say to you now, David, that the Warriors could win, the Spurs could win, the Thunder could win, the Clippers could win, and the Rockets could win, and you'd be hard-pressed to go, and that's crazy, because all those teams have a chance, and that's why it is going to be difficult for them. But the Thunder, if everyone stays healthy, they're offensively loaded, there's defensive guys there, I think they've got it all coming together, and it really depends on how they buy into what Donovan does, and I don't think there's going to be much concern there. So I am really excited to watch what this team is able to do. David, it's been great having you on the show. Remind everybody where they can find your work and where they can find you on Twitter.
Sure. I'm the editor of Thunder's Intentions. I write for Hardwood Paroxysm and also for HotHotHoops.com on the SB Nation network. So you can always follow me at DRAMIL13 on Twitter, and that's probably where you'll find most of my writing.
go ahead and follow David there and check out the stuff that he's writing across on Fansided, on Hardware Paroxysm, and on SB Nation as well. You'll come out more informed and a better educated fan from reading his stuff, so go ahead and do that. It's been great having you on the show. Thank you once again for coming on.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.